Anyone who flew over, and there were a good many news people who did, would know that there is no way to prepare oneself for the sight that we beheld this morning. I don't know that there's in recorded history in our nation that there's ever been a more formidable explosion. What happened, apparently, was a natural explosion equivalent maybe to 10 megatons of nuclear bombs or 10 million tons of TNT that swept across, first with a flash of light and heat, 800 to 1,000 degrees out 12, 15 miles away, that instantly burned everything that was in direct visual sight off the explosion itself.
That was President Carter on May 22, 1980, after viewing the Mount St. Helens devastation by military helicopter. Never have Americans witnessed a more powerful explosion than that which occurred on Sunday morning at 8:32, May 18, 1980. It had been expected, but no one could project the magnitude of what occurred. May 18, 1980 will go down in recorded history as the beginning of a story that will be told and retold for generations.
The Mount St. Helens Eruption, 1980. This report compiled and produced by the news department of KXL Radio, Portland, Oregon.
Although May 18th will be the date to be remembered, the story of the Mount St. Helens eruption began in March, when scientists began monitoring earthquakes on and under the mountain itself. Those quakes were a clear signal of what came to pass on March 27th, and again in May. It was about 11:40 a.m., March 27th. Volcanologist Brian Baker of the University of Oregon was guest on the Jim Althoff program.
The High Cascades are only the youngest of several chains of volcanoes that we've had, even in Oregon. And they've probably been building up over the last 3 or 4 million years. So you've got to take a long-range view. Within the High Cascades as a whole, from British Columbia down to Northern California, we have, maybe a dozen big volcanoes and probably a total of hundreds of small ones. Their characteristic activity is that they erupt maybe on the average every 100 or 200 years, and that they continue to act in this way, erupting really infrequently, only for short periods of time, maybe a few months, a few years, and then sitting doing nothing for a long time. They act this way for tens of thousands or maybe even hundreds of thousands of years. So most of the time, nothing much is going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is why people in the Northwest, we tend to forget that we have some active volcanoes, because they sit there and do nothing for so long. And then something happens and everybody wakes up and says, gee,
we're living on top of...
they're still alive. You know, mm-hmm. Might really do something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have at least six volcanoes in the Northwest that I think are active and are liable to erupt pretty much any time.
Baker was discussing the potential problem of ash fallout.
That often happens with explosive eruptions, and it's happened many times in the geologically recent past with Mount St. Helens. But I think the effects of this can be greatly exaggerated. One's likely to get a big ash cloud. This tends to rise pretty fast to levels of 20, 30, or even 40,000 feet and get up into the stratosphere and then be swept away by jet streams, so that the ash fall scatters a long ways downwind. Now, the thickest ash layers will be formed right on the flanks of the volcano downwind. It would take a really monstrous and unusual type of ash eruption to deposit any significant quantity of ash of the sort that would really cause serious disruption, and then it would only happen downwind.
Little did Dr. Baker know how massive an eruption was yet to come. And little did Dr. Baker know that after talking with Jim Althoff, Mount St. Helens was less than an hour away from its first eruption since 1857. It was 12:38 p.m., March 27th. Hundreds of Southwest Washington listeners began flooding the KXL radio switchboard, telling of the first evidence of volcanic activity. A woman who wanted to be identified only as Suzanne was the first caller to provide an eyewitness account south of Mount St. Helens.
And the sky is turning very dark up there, and the animals are all going absolutely wild like they do with earthquakes and things. And that's how we discovered it was happening, because they started doing freaky things like the cats hide and the dogs run in circles and that type of thing.
I asked our listener what she could actually see at the time.
Ash. it's a big darkness and a rumble, and it hasn't gotten this far yet, but, you know, it actually will come. It'll go clear to the Columbia River, the ash.
Hundreds of telephone calls confirmed this account of the first eruption, even before it could be confirmed by officials. As quick as the information was coming in to KXL, it was being heard across the nation. Here's one account as broadcast on the Mutual Radio Network.
An eyewitness who calls herself Suzanne describes what she sees.
Ash. it's a big darkness and a rumble, and it hasn't gotten this far yet, but, you know, it'll go clear to the Columbia River, the ash.
Suzanne lives south of Mount St. Helens. This is the first time in more than 100 years the volcano has erupted.
Almost simultaneously, pilots began to flood the FAA with radio calls telling of volcanic activity at the summit of the 9,700-foot mountain. Pilot Mark Brisbane, flying the KXL Skytrack, was among the first to view the summit.
About 1,000 feet over the mountain, and at this time it looks like cinders, the snow is browned, and there's a crack running all the way across the mountain from south to north to where it looks like it could almost go any time.
Brisbane provided several descriptions in talking with reporter Lars Larson.
If you were on the north side of the mountain, this is what you might see.
It's pretty much the top of the mountain on the north side to where it slopes down. The whole north side is about a quarter of the way down the mountain is brown.
KXL reporter Jody Leverance also viewed Mount St. Helens from the KXL Skytrack.
We just flew close enough to where we could see the big crack on top. It appears, like the lady said a little bit earlier in the news, that it is bulging. Well, it obviously is bulging because the ice and the snow up here is cracking all around the northeast side and around the north side. And the crack itself is maybe 40, 50 feet wide. It appears to be maybe 700 or 800 feet long. And without a doubt, is steam coming from it. We also saw a big crater at the very top of it, and that appears to be maybe 75 to 80 feet in diameter. But that's just about all we could see from where we're at.
From Silver Lake to the north, a KXL listener had a grandstand view of Mount St. Helens and was in touch with Alan Budwill.
That black wispy cloud has floated away, and you're right. Right this minute, there's no more coming out the top.
Yeah, we just talked to our airplane who's circling the area, and he essentially reports the same thing. I wish, though, if you do see some activity up there, that you give us a call back right away. So far, it sounds like you have the best view of the whole situation today, Pat.
Nightfall came, and things grew quiet until early the next morning, March 28th. A huge plume of smoke and ash shot into the air to 20,000 feet. U.S. Forest Service spokeswoman Sylvia Brucci.
A column rose from the top of the mountain, starting out about 1,000 feet. It got to about 20,000 feet above sea level in a half an hour. The column is composed of ash and steam. However, it is not glowing.
Geologist Don Swanson flew into the plume.
At one stage, we were climbing very high, so in order to get a view down into the crater if possible. And we passed through the plume cloud at about 17,000 feet, I think, or 17.5. And for several seconds got a terrible rotten egg smell, which is hydrogen sulfide, H2S.
Right now, let's go and check in with Jody Leverance, who is flying in the vicinity of Mount St. Helens. Jody, back to you.
Okay, the Forest Service is keeping us out here 10 miles west of Mount St. Helens at 11,000 feet above sea level. From where we're at, we can see a column of steam and ash mixed stagnating above the peak of the mountain. A few moments ago, as I mentioned, we had a brief look at the northwest base, and it appeared that the volcanic ash was settling around the surrounding area, the better portion of it at the base itself. Now, hopefully, in another 10 minutes or so, they'll let us get a closer look, and perhaps we'll have something more.
So, Jody, it does look that the ash is further down the mountain slope this morning.
Without a doubt, Brian, yeah. As I said, Yesterday it was confined to the northeastern face of the mountain. Today, when we had a look at it, it's all around the blanket of forest, and it definitely is browning the snow.
How much of the actual mountain can you see, Jody? Can you see the north base, or how much can you see?
Well, when we flew over to head up to Rife Lake, the only thing that we had a look at was the northwestern face. At this point, the clouds are covering up much of the mountain, and the only thing we can see is the steam.
Okay, Jody, and how high does that go? Is that above you?
Yes, it definitely is. I would estimate it is reaching perhaps 14 to 15,000 feet above sea level.
That was on Friday, March 28th. And by the weekend, heavy clouds moved in and covered Mount St. Helens, and things grew calm. There wasn't much activity until Wednesday, April 2nd.
How high were those rocks coming forth from the crater?
Well, a few of them shooting maybe 100, 200 feet. We saw one plume of smoke being shot with rocks maybe 1,000 feet in the air. That's not an exaggeration. They were really going off. It was like the 4th of July up here about 10 minutes ago.
But from April 2nd, things again grew quiet. Mount St. Helens entered into a holding pattern. But what had occurred became the talk of the town, the talk of the nation. St. Helens had become famous. And so had the man who had lived on her slopes for over 50 years. 83-year-old Harry Truman was the friend of almost everyone who went to Spirit Lake. He operated the lodge there. Harry Truman took the grumbling with a grain of salt. No, he would not evacuate, even if a violent eruption occurred. Overnight, he became a media star, a folk hero, to those who saw him, heard about him, read about him, and loved him. Jerry Hansen of Seattle put it all in words and song. An ode to Mount St. Helens.
Now what's that distant noise we hear? It sounds like World War III is near. We're shaking like we're sitting on powder kegs. We're watching while our car tops rest and our noses fill with volcanic dust. It's stinking and it smells like rotten eggs. And Harry Truman, if you're smart tonight, you'd better hang on to your knickers tight and take notice when that summit starts to fly. Cause when that sucker gets ready to blow and the steam escapes and the mudslides flow, you can stoop and kiss your molten ash goodbye.
Now Harry Truman, you gotta go. You can't be stuck there in that snow. You gotta leave that dirty mountainside. It's gonna rock, it's gonna roll, it's gonna leave a nasty hole. It'll be too late to find a place to hide.
Did you ever think that she would wake with such a big old bellyache that her name would soon become a household word? Now she's spouting off for all to see, though when she blows is a mystery. It'll be the loudest blast you ever heard. Well, the tourists come to see her smoke, and they all think it's one big joke. That mountain's just a molehill in disguise. But when that lava starts to ooze, they'll be running the heels off their shoes. Heck, we just thought she was overpublicized.
Now, Harry Truman, you gotta go. You can't be stuck there in that snow. You gotta leave that dirty mountainside. It's gonna rock, it's gonna roll, it's gonna leave a nasty hole. It'll be too late to find a place to hide.
All the seismographers' nerves are wound when the Richter scale is jumping round. They don't want you on that mountain when it blows. You should know that all good things don't last, and you might be coming down real fast. Get your rear in gear, as that old saying goes. Now the saddest thing we know is true. What Mount St. Helens going through is the fear old Harry's cats can't bear to meet. When the icebergs melt and the ground gets red and old Helen wishes she were dead, we know that poor old mountain was in heat.
Now Harry Truman, you gotta go. You can't be stuck there in that snow. You gotta leave that dirty mountainside. It's gonna rock, it's gonna roll, it's gonna leave a nasty hole. It'll be too late to find a place to hide.
Well, I know you're sticking to your guns and you think that we're the cowardly ones, cause when we start running scared, well, you're all smiles. And you say you know that mountain well, but when that baby starts to swell, it's a burp that can be heard 400 miles.
Now, Harry Truman, you gotta go. You can't be stuck there in that snow. You gotta leave that dirty mountainside. It's gonna rock, it's gonna roll, it's gonna leave a nasty hole. It'll be too late to find a place to hide.
Come on, Harry, come off that mountain.
Come on down off that mountain, Harry.
Get your tail down here, Harry. Molten come lava.
And then came May 18th, 1980.
The Mount St. Helens eruption, 1980, continues on Side 2. Mount St. Helens, 1980, compiled and produced by the news department of KXL Radio, Portland, Oregon, now continues.
From April 2nd to May 18th, Mount St. Helens, with her new and visible crater, continued to spew forth insignificant amounts of steam and ash. Ash continued to darken her once majestic glaciers, but people in the area resumed normal living patterns. It was a sleepy Sunday morning, May 18th. A high overcast, but St. Helens was visible. The time was 8:32. Telephone calls began coming in from 150 miles to the north and south of KXL with reports of a violent explosion. Later, scientists would speculate what happened was equivalent to 500 times the atomic explosion of Hiroshima during World War II. Billowing clouds of steam and smoke rose to 60,000 feet in the air. Blue flashes of lightning permeated the white clouds. Some described it as hell on earth. Ron Jennings of Vancouver, Washington, was camping near St. Helens and witnessed what occurred.
So we did hear rumbling, so we thought it was thunder, so we packed up our stuff and we're going to get out of there real quick before it started raining. Well, we went up around a corner, and we saw that the mountain was going off and that was what the cause was. So we stopped and watched it for about 4 hours. And during that time, we saw the size of the crater visibly get wider, probably about 30% wider. It looked to me like it was at least several miles wide across the top in the area it was coming out of. And the mountain had changed shape considerably. It looked like a great part deal of the top of the mountain was gone. And on the left side, which would have been towards Spirit Lake, from where we're at, it looked like debris was actually being thrown up out of the volcano, and we could see it falling down on the mountain through binoculars.
One of the most vivid descriptions came from Dave Mullen of the National Guard Rescue Squadron. He was one of the first to search for victims on that historic Sunday.
The entire forest is laying on the ground. I mean, it's like an atomic bomb went off up there. Apparently, from what we can put together, when the thing went this morning about 8:30 or 8:39, it leveled a good deal of the forest all around the mountain, at least on the northwest side. There's 4, 5, 6 inches of ash, depending on how close you are, laying over everything. You can't land anywhere with a helicopter because it just creates a complete whiteout situation. You can't see. It would be hazardous, you know, it gets in your engine, so you can't live with it, you can't land. The only thing you can do is use a hoist to get somebody down to a site that you want to look at.
That was how the Mike Moore family of Castle Rock, Washington was rescued, by a hoist lowered from a helicopter. The Moores, with a 4.5-year-old and a 3-month-old baby girl, had hiked to the Independence Mine camping area about 10 miles north of the mountain the evening before the explosion. The next morning, Lou Moore says they were forced to take refuge in the mine shaft.
We packed our packs and everything inside of Independence Mine while it was dark, and it got pitch black, very, very black. You couldn't see the outline of anything. It wasn't like midnight. It was black, and it was like that for about an hour. When it started to open up and clear out, we were all packed and ready to go.
The Moores walked through miles of ash and debris before being rescued. All around them for miles, there was death and devastation. Animals stood in shock. Mud flows wiped out everything. They diverted and reshaped major rivers. Logs jammed the rivers downstream, causing flooding. The towns of Castle Rock, Tootle, and Cougar were evacuated. Trees looked like matchsticks, strewn over the mountainsides. The major artery between Portland and Seattle, Interstate 5, was closed, causing a massive traffic tie-up. To the north and east of Mount St. Helens, the community of Randall had been covered with a thick layer of ash. Jim Unterwagner of the U.S. Forest Service had communicated with members of the Randall Ranger Station.
This morning early, they had 3 inches of ash at Randall, fine ash. It was so dark that they couldn't even see with the lights on. There were cars that were stalling out that were driving through the heavy ash fall. And at 12:12 this afternoon, when we talked to them, they said it was starting to lighten up and was looking like the eclipse did when we had the eclipse earlier.
The huge ash cloud continued to move northeastward. It soon reached Yakima, dumping inches on the ground and paralyzing the Yakima Valley. Residents were forced to depend on alternate water supplies. By evening, the U.S. Geological Survey had an assessment of what had occurred. Spokesman Bob Christensen.
The eruption occurred essentially without warning. The first I was aware of anything was a hurried notice that a very large earthquake had occurred. It was coming in at the time on our seismographs downstairs at the Forest Service building. And while I was still talking to the fellow who had brought me that message, we started having calls that the volcano was in eruption. It's apparent from reconstructing these things that they both occurred essentially simultaneously. It may be that the earthquake triggered the volcano into eruption.
Jim Unterwagner of the U.S. Forest Service had an assessment of the destruction.
For about 15 miles, all of the timber was probably blowing down in that area in a long, narrow swath. They were able to notice that. They said there practically no vegetation at all on the north side up to the Mount Margaret area, and that's what they're talking about. They said there wasn't even as much as a stump there, that all of the trees were over on their sides. A lot of ash in the area also.
By evening, ash was coming down over all of eastern Washington, Idaho, and Montana. By the next morning, the city of Spokane, an area of about 300,000 people, was paralyzed.
The situation is there's dust everywhere. The city's been brought to a virtual standstill. An entire state of emergency has been declared by Sheriff Larry Erickson. He doesn't want any cars on the street whatsoever. The speed limit for cars that do travel during the emergency is 20 miles an hour, about an inch of dust on the ground, and it's just incredible. The city's brought to a complete halt. No businesses are opening. Schools have been closed. The bus system has been brought to a halt. As a matter of fact, some of the buses have broken down because of the dust getting inside their engines. It's not known exactly when all this is going to be cleaned up or how it's going to be cleaned up. People are advised to wear masks outside if they do go outside, and it's advised that you stay indoors, keep your activity limited, especially people with upper respiratory problems.
Reporter Gary Darrigol of KXL sister station KJRB in Spokane on Monday morning, the 19th. The same morning, the clouds, smoke, and ash had cleared for the first accurate assessment of the mountain itself. KXL's Jody Leverance provided this description of the crater from the KXL SkyTrack plane.
It looks enormous. As I mentioned before, we have an enormous gaping hole in the top, emitting steam and ash. It's huge. It's absolutely enormous. It could be perhaps a mile wide. It's difficult to say, but the mountain itself seems to be very, very wide and short at this point. We have no longer a pinnacle appearance.
The 9,700-foot peak had been reduced by about 2,000 feet. From the northeast side, Leverance had this description.
Much of the mountain is covered by this volcanic fallout. As a matter of fact, just about all of it is. We have a little bit of snow that's peeking through, but not very much. When we were on the northeast side, everything is pretty well devastated from about 10 miles in or 15 miles from the base end. It appears that much of the vegetation and the forest has pretty well leveled out and been covered over by the volcanic ash. From looking up here, I'd say it's doubtful whether anything survived within 5 to 10 miles in from the northeast side. It looks pretty bad.
As for the huge mud flow which devastated the Toutle River Valley,
nothing could hold up underneath, not even homes. House tops laying on the solid mud. Cars, buses submerged in 4 to 5 feet of muck, and we got up to the point where we saw where the force from the volcano blast had knocked down the trees. That's absolutely unbelievable too, because everything is laying on the forest floor. Trees have been knocked down, vegetation, absolutely nothing stirring about up there, no life at all. It's obvious that nothing could have survived it.
At the National Weather Service, forecaster Ron Surface predicted the ash fallout would reach the Atlantic seaboard by Wednesday. It did. And as the ash was moving east, President Carter was flying west to assess the federal response to the disaster. On Thursday, May 22, 1980, the president viewed the devastation by military helicopter, reaching 3 miles of the summit of Mount St. Helens. His first impression given to reporters in Kelso.
Well, it's hard to describe because I've never seen or heard of anything like this before. Somebody said it looked like a moonscape. But the moon looks like a golf course compared to what's up there. It is a horrible looking sight. The mountains are just completely devastated. You can't see where the ground even was formerly.
And later, the president would suggest the area become a national monument.
I don't want to add a frivolous or a light-hearted note to a serious discussion, but I would guess that in the future, a year from now or whatever, when access can be provided under the careful control of the state and federal officials, that this will be a site that people will come from all over the world to observe. The impressiveness of the force of nature is overwhelming, and when safe places are fixed for tourists and others and scientists to come in and observe it, I would say there would be if you'll excuse the expression, a tourist attraction that would, you know, equal the Grand Canyon or something. It's an unbelievable sight.
The Mount St. Helens eruption of 1980 will be told and retold for generations. The full impact may never be known. The mountain and its eruption will not be forgotten, nor will its first citizen, Harry Truman. In his last recorded interview, Harry Truman said, "It wasn't Mount St. Helens that bothered him. Rather," he said, "it was the earthquakes."
I've probably gone through more earthquakes than any man in the world up here. This second. They're not coming as bad. I went through a series here a couple of weeks ago when I was having a bunch of those old 4.5 to 4.8 to 5 on the Richter. And by God, brothers, when you get a 5 in this kitchen, you know you've had something.
Truman said the earthquakes were enough to wake the dead.
Night before last, I had one about 5 in the Richter scale, and my bed moved about 6 inches north and south.
And just 12 hours before the eruption, Harry Truman invited reporters to come back and visit.
Yeah. Okay, we'll do it. Drop in. Feel free anytime. Just park right in front of the door there. I'm here day and night. I never leave.
His Spirit Lake Lodge now lies beneath tons of mud and debris. But the memory of Harry Truman and his mountain will live on forever. Recording artist, R.W. Stone.
Weeks and weeks of anticipation, waiting for the mountain to blow. But old Harry Truman made his declaration. No way in hell was he gonna go. If I leave my home, I'd die in a week. This mountain's where I buried my wife. I've got plenty of booze and there's fish in the creek. I'm staying here the rest of my life. Oh, Harry Truman, your Spirit Lake is gone. But oh, Harry Truman, your spirit will live on and on. Finally, one day in the middle of May, the mountain started breaking in two. Winds started rumbling, trees started crumbling, and old St. Helens, she blew. The rocks started flying, and people, they were trying to run, but it was too late. The sky was so black, when the people looked back, they couldn't see their face. Supposed to be a saint. Oh, Harry Truman, your Spirit Lake is gone. But oh, Harry Truman, your spirit will live on and on. Harry Truman, your spirit will live on and on. Harry Truman, your spirit.
The Mount St. Helens Eruption, 1980. Compiled and produced by the news department of KXL Radio, Portland, Oregon. All rights reserved. KXL 7.